I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. No summer would be complete without a field trip. I got mine in this morning, along with the world's history guy, Chris Wolfe, and intern Michelle Harvin. We went down to the Museum of Fine Arts here in Boston to get an up-close look at the Magna Carta. Yep, the Magna Carta, that really old English document that inspired our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And I mean really old. There are only four copies of the Magna Carta left in the world. As we walked into the gallery, Chris was the first one to spot it.
And there it is. It's tiny.
I was going to say, I mean, my eyes were drawn to this room, and suddenly in the back of it is this piece of paper that looks like the size of a placemat.
Yeah, like 20 inches by 20 inches square, with like little small writing on it that I'm going to have to get my glasses to read. And even then, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make out many of the words.
So we're talking to a man, Chris Wolfe, who grew up not far from where this thing was signed. And you're seeing this for the first time, the original, not a replica. This is the first time you're seeing it.
That's right. And that's pretty cool. That's 800 years old. Well, 799. But once you get past 798, who's counting? And it's a very clear script. I'd be pretty impressed if a scribe could do that nowadays. It's all in Latin, of course, Magna Carta, the Great Charter.
And Carta actually even goes, the root would be paper, right? Cartelleria in Italian, I mean, so it's like giant paper.
Yeah, in a sense, but that's literally, it was a formal piece of paper, like a document, a charter. And this is the Great Charter because it was the first, and many people argue, the most important document in constitutional history.
So what is the story of the Magna Carta? I mean, when was it written? Why was it written?
Well, 15th of June, 1215, if you can imagine. That's almost 800 years ago. And it was basically a bunch of revolting nobles forced the king, bad King John. Remember King John from the Robin Hood movies? Same guy. And basically cajoled and bullied him into signing this charter, which gave away a lot of his powers and privileges to the nobles, or at least codified it. It's interesting how they kind of exploited history, the nobles, to try and justify what they were doing by harking back to an older golden age and some previous documents that had been signed. Like in 1100, there was a Charter of Liberties that King Henry I issued when he was coronated. So they used that kind of strong-arm the king into giving away these powers.
Yeah, what kind of powers, Chris? And what exactly does this say in relation to those powers?
Well, scholars have broken it down into several dozen clauses or chapters, but I think the most important ones are the things that it's basically saying that the king, the executive power in the land, is subject to the law as well, that everybody is subject to the law, that you can't be imprisoned, outlawed, exiled, you can't have your property taken away except by due process of law.
I mean, I grew up learning that the Magna Carta was kind of the precursor to the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. Is it perceived in the U.K. in the same way as, like, the British document where everything started?
It's very interesting, the differences here and in the U.K. The MFA, where we're standing, has the title of the exhibit as the Inspiration for the Founding Fathers. And in the U.K., I don't know, you grew up so surrounded by history. I grew up just a little couple of miles from Runnymede. Runnymede is the little place where it was sound. It literally means it's the wet meadow by the banks of the Thames. And, you know, we go play there amongst all the monuments that are there now. There's still a big meadow, which is great because it's just not far from London. But there's monuments from all kinds of constitutional groups in America that have gone over and built these memorials. Because really it is, for many scholars, English scholars as well would say, this is probably the founding document for what we consider modern Western constitutional government, that there are limits on power and limits on what kings and princes and presidents can do.
So what's it like for you to see this thing for the first time? How are you feeling right now, considering you romped around all these kind of historical monuments not far from where this was signed?
I'm pretty blown away, actually. I didn't think I was going to be too excited because it's just a thing. I've always been interested more in history for ideas. And then physically to see the document that King John and those nobles put the royal seal to and their own signatures on, it's pretty amazing. I should say there were about 40 to 50 copies made, one for the Royal Archives, one for the City of London, I believe, and one for every county in the realm at that time.
I think back, you know, to the Declaration of Independence and how it is now evoked by politicians. That's not what the Founding Fathers intended. Do British politicians kind of look back at the Magna Carta and say, oh, we can't do X, Y, or Z because that's not what the Founding Fathers intended?
Well, interestingly, they used to. It was huge, like, for the first century after it was signed. It was used all the time. And then it kind of fell into the background a little bit. But when it really comes into its own is the end of the Tudors and the beginning of the Stuart era, when the kings of the realm are trying to push back and claim more of the royal prerogative, trying to grab back absolute power for the monarchy, like happened in France. And the Puritans are leading the charge against the royal power. And, of course, the Puritans, because they didn't like it, one of their choices was to leave. And where did they go? Boston. So there's kind of a nice kind of circle there that they brought with them, that passion that was prevalent in England at the time.
And the fact is, we are at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. I mean, take off your history hat for a moment and put on your art critic hat, even if you don't have one, put it on. You think it's beautiful? I mean, what's your kind of overall appreciation of this as a piece of fine art?
Well, my nickname at college was the Cultural Desert, so I don't know about how much of an art critic we could say. But it looks like ancient parchment paper. Paper until the 19th century was designed to last forever. Modern paper will just disintegrate after 100 years or so. But you can see it's still there. It's very tightly spaced lines. There's almost no punctuation except for occasionally you'll see one big capital letter standing out every five lines or so. And otherwise, it's just like James Joyce's Ulysses, just a long stream of script. It just goes on and on, enouncing different liberties. And I have to go back to the history thing, though. It's the real moving thing is like what it embodies in terms of like freedom.
Yeah, elaborate on that. What does it embody? For you, I mean, just at a personal level.
Well, isn't it great that I can own a house and you can't be turned out of it willy-nilly unless there's, you know, you go through the due process of the law that, you know, I only pay taxes by my consent. You know, there's so many principles in there that, you know, just make life so worth living.
Chris Wolfe, the World's History Guy, thanks for coming down to the museum today.
You're welcome.
The Magna Carta is on display at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston through Labor Day. And by the way, the exhibit also includes handwritten drafts of the Declaration of Independence from Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. It's all really cool stuff. Anyway, to take us to the break, what better than a bit of Monty Python to illustrate just how reverently some Brits view their constitutional history?